You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I am Anthony Irwin. I am joined, as always, by Harrison Fagan. And honestly, one day, Harrison, we need to write a book about your time at Cal State Fullerton because it might actually be the most entertaining thing you'd ever write.
That's a little hurtful. I mean, I feel like I've written some like decent things, but I guess if you say so.
It would be tremendous. It would feature scissors flying at your face. It would feature Trump rallies.
You know what?
Like, holy cow.
She's not going to listen to this. She's not going to listen to this podcast. Yeah, somebody threw scissors at my face yesterday. That was not cool. Probably should fire them. Not going to name them by name, but that was messed up.
What's great is it came like a day or two after I made the joke with Trevor that like if assault and battery occurred in the workplace, most workplaces wouldn't leave it up to the employees to figure it out, and then whoosh. Poke a hole out with those things.
I was almost permanently disfigured. This time I didn't deserve it even. So that was probably the most frustrating part of it. But anyway, that's what happened. Let's just say I'm glad to not be in charge of college students anymore within like the next couple days.
Makes absolute sense.
Instead, and it'll make the show better because I'll be on it more and you guys can stop tweeting at me that Anthony sucks. I get it. He sucks. It's fine. You don't have to complain to me about it. There's nothing I can do.
Are you getting those tweets, or are you getting people asking you which day spa you use?
No, it's definitely more like, Harrison, come back. Like, the show has gone to crap without you. I miss you. You're the greatest.
I think those scissors might have actually hit you upside the head.
So, I wish.
Instead of talking about the college kids that you are happy to be without, we are going to talk about the freshly out of college Lonzo Ball and whether the Lakers are using him properly today. So,
oh, this is a Lakers podcast. Though.
Yeah,
okay.
Crazy, right? So we're going to do a bit of a deep dive. I don't want to call it a full on deep dive into this because I don't think there's enough of a sample size to really get into all of the issues here. But I think there's some general points that I would like cleaned up on both sides, from Lonzo and from the Lakers. And I think it's an interesting topic, LeVar Ball quotes notwithstanding. So, yeah. As always, make sure you're following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, and Lakers Outsiders. Let's get this thing going. We'll give you the context with we can't be too... We have to acknowledge that this topic came about after LeVar ran his mouth yesterday about the Lakers' raggedy record. Why don't you give the full quote, Harrison?
Yes. So I definitely have that pulled up in front of me. He said,
"You just quoted
he said
it.
Of he said of Lonzo, he's disgusted. He's not used to losing like this. The Lakers should build around Lonzo. Why are they sitting him down and not starting him the fourth quarter? This is why the record is raggedy." And so, I mean, my first thought when I saw this was, okay, he's running out of things to say, because this is the second time that he's complained about Lonzo's usage in the fourth quarter, and I do feel like we should clear this up a little bit. Like, this isn't some instance of Lonzo 100% like definitely deserves to be on the court in the fourth quarter and like he's getting screwed up. Like, yes, he should probably be out there because he's one of the Lakers' most promising young players and he should be getting minutes for that. But like, the Lakers overall on the season are 4.3 points per 100 possessions worse with Lonzo on the are getting outscored by their opponents by 4.3 points per 100 possessions with Lonzo on the court. And with Lonzo off the court, that number goes down to 1.3. So they are, like, numerically, they have been better with Lonzo off the court. Okay, but if we look at the fourth quarter, then it gets even more stark. The Lakers have been outscored by 14 points per 100 possessions with Lonzo on the court in the fourth quarter. And they have outscored their opponents by 2.5 points per 100 possessions with Lonzo on the bench. And so this isn't some instance of Lonzo is very clearly making the team better in the fourth quarter. Now, I think part of LeVar's argument is that if he started the fourth quarter, he'd be more in rhythm and the Lakers would be better off. And there's no way that I can, like, you can't prove a hypothetical. You can't prove or disprove a hypothetical. Maybe that would solve everything. Maybe, like, the whole reason Lonzo has struggled during his rookie year is that he's not starting fourth quarters. I don't think that that's the case, and I don't think that it's inexcusable that the Lakers have not played him at times in fourth quarters.
I'm looking, this is from Tim McMahon at ESPN underscore McMahon. He's quote tweeting that LeVar tweet and says, Lonzo Ball in fourth quarters, 27.3 field goal percentage in a minus 33 in 136 minutes. That's not a small sample size at this point.
It's actually a decent sample size now.
Right, and so I think I want to get
into... It's not huge, but it's not insignificant.
Before we get into kind of what could be done about it, I wanted to quickly just kind of note why I think it's going on. And in the fourth quarter, the game slows down considerably. It's a lot more half court. It comes down to execution. It's why the better teams that have been together for a little while tend to be better than the up-and-comers that are hoping to catch you in the first three quarters and build a big enough lead so that if and when the game slows down, they can mitigate or limit some of that damage that will come about from being the lesser team in a half-court situation. And when Lonzo is playing at his best, or when he looks at his best, he's rebounding and he's outletting the ball to other players as the game is at a more frenetic pace. In the half court, he's not going to help you because teams can just sag off of him completely. When he catches the ball, we're a few steps away from... Did you see who was it? I think Chris Paul this season saw Andre Roberson in the corner, and Roberson went up to shoot it, and Chris Paul not only turned around to him to go get the rebound, but he also said, "Oh hell no!" as if the ball had a snowball's chance in hell at going through the basket. So we're a few steps away from that being the case with Lonzo with defenders, and until that improves, and that's going to be something that's going to take time to improve, he really doesn't have a place out there in fourth quarters of games that the Lakers are hoping to win.
Yeah, and I mean, to your point, they actually have played slower in the fourth quarter overall on the season than they have, like, in other quarters. So that's actually, like, that's not just an eye test thing or just a cliche thing. That's actually true, like, numerically true.
Yeah.
I had that
information off the top of my head. I absolutely knew that was true.
Yeah, I'm sure. to your point, like, it mitigates Lonzo's skill set. He is very, very good at pushing the break. And when he can't do that, he all of a sudden becomes even less useful to the Lakers. And his shooting deficiencies are kind of
all over the court, by the way.
Magnified.
All over, like, even when he's driving, defenders either know, like, it's kind of sad to watch when he's driving. Defenders know exactly what he's looking to do. Actually, I want to keep talking about this on the other side here, because the way teams are defending him is becoming really obvious, and it's affecting everybody else on the court with him. So let's just take a quick few seconds here, and then I want to get back to how defenders are going about defending him. So when you watch Lonzo dribble either direction, you can kind of see what defenders know he, because of the way he shoots, what he's looking to do. When he dribbles left, that's when he's more likely to pull up and shoot a pull-up jumper or a step-back jumper or whatever. It's more likely he's going to release from the outside. Whereas when he dribbles to his right, defenders know, well, yeah, he has to get all the way to the rim because he can't pull up. There's no way to make that footwork work and bring the ball back towards the defender, even if he gets a step, to release a mid-range jumper. And so what they're doing is They're just kind of staying on his hip, waiting for him to either pass or get all the way to the rim. And because Lonzo isn't elevating, because I still think he's playing a little too fast for his athletic ability, when he's trying to elevate, he's not getting higher than the rim. So the defender just kind of laughs as they swipe his shot away. And it's become a little sad, because if he's passing, the defenders are already ready for it, because they just it's easy enough to defend his shot that they can kind of plan ahead for the pass. It's kind of like if you watch a baseball player go up against a pitcher who doesn't have enough of a speed difference between their changeup and a fastball, the hitter can just sit on either pitch, because if he's throwing a 93-mile-an-hour fastball in a 91-mile-an-hour changeup, like, that's just a slower fastball, right? So what you're watching is, with these defenders, it's become way too easy for them to defend him. And it's fine in the first three quarters when you're out in the open court and there's more things for a defender to hone in on. But in the half court, when everybody's kind of set, every time Lonzo has the ball, good luck, man.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is in the fourth quarters, like, these we all know NBA teams, game to game, don't do that much scouting or change that much scheme-wise heading into the game. And a lot of the time that ends up being stuff that's based on feel as the game goes on. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they didn't watch Lonzo that much. I mean, his shooting struggles have been very publicized, but maybe as they're heading into the fourth quarters as well, they're starting to get a better idea of how to defend him and are more happy to just go ahead and let him shoot. And so I think, and then that, again, there's got to be some part of this, I think, that's in his head as well, as far as, like, how bad his shooting is. Like, he knows, he's heard all the talk. And so I think there is, like, an intangible factor where that's going to weigh on you. And especially in state, I would actually kind of explain why he's shooting so much better away from Staples Center than in Staples Center, because I don't know if you've been to a game this year, but when he gears up to shoot, you can just kind of hear the arena go quiet, and they're just like praying that thing falls. And that's got to be disconcerting a little bit.
Yeah. And look, the other thing here too is, I don't know if the Lakers are necessarily putting him in a situation consistently to succeed. I think the game is hard enough when you're struggling the way Lonzo has from the floor. If you're
putting, what do you think that they're doing how are they setting him up to fail?
Well, like, right now, every time he catches the ball, the defense has a chance to get set up, because the ball stops with him, either to run a pick and roll or to dribble to a spot where somebody else is going to benefit from a set that they're running. But in general, when Lonzo catches the ball, he's stationary. And when you're stationary, the defense, not just your guy, by the way, the entire defense can keep at least one eye on you. Like, that's one of the fundamentals of defensive basketball is, all right, keep one eye on the ball, especially if the guy who's catching it isn't moving or your guy isn't moving, right? When your guy is moving, you have to go and probably focus more on him so that you don't get burnt backdoor. But if you're guarding off ball and everybody is kind of stationary as they wait for a pick and roll to be run, well, then that's about as easy a set as there is to defend. And what I would like to see is whether it's cuts above the top or running down the baseline or dribble handoffs, whatever it might be, just get Lonzo on the move a little bit more, just so that the defense isn't completely honed in on every time he catches the ball. Because, again, because he's so limited in his options, if the defense has any kind of advantage whatsoever, as they do when he catches the ball stationary, then, again, like I said earlier, good luck. We're seeing that manifest itself into the way the Lakers kind of struggle in fourth quarters with him on the court.
Yeah, and I have some mixed thoughts on how Lonzo's being used that I think that we should talk a little bit more about in a second.
You're always way too early on these.
Am I way too? Okay, go ahead then. Well I guess I'll just jump into it then. I guess I mistimed. But I think some of this is on the Lakers, and some of this is on the coaches, and some of this is on the front office, and just the realities of, like, some of this is nobody's fault, really. Mm-hmm. And I think there
or
are a couple
everybody's.
Things. Yeah, or everybody's.
Right.
Everybody's all at once. Mm-hmm. Just the world and fate and God and LeVar and everyone.
Yeah.
But so I think that there are a couple issues for Lonzo as far as this goes. I think the Lakers have done a good job of, as the season went on, they've not been asking him to do like everything for their offense. I think they realized that was too much of a burden, and that's actually been reflected in his usage rate, which is like pretty far down the list of Lakers now. But I think that I agree with you on the getting him going off the move. He was so good at catching lobs and things like that at UCLA that's definitely something that the Lakers should be looking to do, is getting him on the move and getting him some easy plays. And then that kind of, you see the ball go through the rim. I think there's an intangible benefit to that. But I think the reason we aren't seeing it is partially on the Lakers coaching staff. They could probably do some things to try and get him moving a little bit and try and get him doing some more of this stuff. But then it's also just, they don't really have the playmakers on some level to justify it. And that's on the front office. And I'm going to say this because you get killed enough for saying it. And so I don't really like, we don't need to blow up your mentions again today, mm-hmm. but
I'll still get blamed, but go ahead.
This is where you miss D'Angelo Russell. I'm sorry. Like that's not an original take. That's not something that no one said before, but I'm going to say it again because Brook Lopez, for all of his, like all the ways that he can help the Lakers, for all of his skills, he's not a guy who can make a play off the dribble. He's not a guy who can get his own shot. He's not a guy who can make shots for others in the same way that Russell would be able to. And this isn't to say that it was necessarily a mistake for the Lakers to trade Russell, because they have their reasons for doing it. We'll see if it ends up working out. If they sign two max free agents this summer, then I don't think that anybody's going to complain that Lonzo missed out on playing with D'Angelo Russell during his rookie year. But when you say that, the reality is that they just didn't set him up with enough playmakers otherwise. Jordan Clarkson is not that guy. Julius Randle has shown some playmaking chops, still not that guy. The Lakers don't have that guy that can make it a little bit easier on Lonzo, not only in just being able to go get his own shot, but also being a threat to pass so that they can get Lonzo going in those off-ball actions. Because Jordan Clarkson, he can go out there and play, and he can go out there and get his own shot, but he's not going to be a guy that like gets you into the offense and waits for Lonzo to get like a play off the ball, like out of some set, and throws him a pinpoint pass for a lob. That's just not who he is. He has strengths as a player. Those aren't among them. And so it's roster construction, it's coaching, it's everything, and the Lakers are just a bad team. And so this is also just partially going to be reality for them. You aren't going to be able to fill all of the holes in your roster in one off season. And so on some level, I don't know how much they could have done about this. I think if you see the Lakers sign, this is obvious, but if you see the Lakers sign two max free agents this offseason, it's going to make things way easier on Lonzo, because those guys are going to be able to make plays for him, and it won't just be such a one-way street where he has to make every play for everyone.
Right, and I want to add to this here in a second. So roster construction is one issue, and look, this is what happens when you have a rookie that joins a bad team. Like, you have to be a transcendent rookie to turn around a team that has been bad for 5 years now.
So right? Let's bash him, because LeVar said he would be transcendent. That's how this works, right?
Man, I don't understand that thinking still.
We never will.
It's crazy to me. Like, people keep saying, like, oh, we can't recalibrate our thinking on this, otherwise nobody would ever be a bust. And I'm like, so wait, busts have to exist in your thinking. That's what you're telling me right now. Is that you have to, their basketball analysis would not be complete if we could not call people busts.
No, what are we doing this for then, otherwise?
But anywho, with what the Lakers are capable of doing right now. Like, there's a reason people are so surprised that they're having any success anywhere on a basketball court. Like, people are shocked that they have a top 10 defense in December. Like, that legitimately shocks me. I would never have predicted that going into this. And that's because the roster as constructed, not just this year, but over the last 5 years of my life, has not been a team that I thought was capable of doing this kind of thing. And what, even if you can add Brook Lopez, you can add Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who are both average NBA starters, maybe below average, slightly below, but
no, I think they're average. They're fine.
Well, I'd say I guess I should reframe that. They are below average. Like, I don't know if I would want those two guys starting on a playoff team. Like, I wouldn't feel very good about that. Depending on it also depends on who they're surrounded by, but if they're your third and fourth best players, you're in some serious trouble, I would say.
Yeah.
But with Lopez, like, yes, he's working his butt off and he's contesting like a madman, and he gets credit for that. But that doesn't help Lonzo on offense. And Lopez was supposed to step in here and help with spacing and providing Lonzo with enough holes in the defense by stretching them out with, you know, the way a five who can shoot can do that kind of thing.
And instead, he has shot 30.8% from the field and not made 175 threes yet this year.
That isn't helping Lonzo. That's not what he's been intended to do. And again, like you said, this isn't why the D'Angelo Russell trade was a bad trade. That we don't even have to get into that. But this is why the Lakers missed somebody like D'Angelo Russell. If it isn't D'Angelo Russell himself.
No, wait, you aren't allowed to say this. Hold on. I'm going to cut you off. I'm saving you from getting in trouble. You aren't allowed to say this. Right. I'm allowed to say it because I'm logical. And you have an irrational love of D'Angelo Russell.
I was just about to say it doesn't have to be D'Angelo Russell. Like, I think the Lakers, if KCP showed any ability in the half court other than spot-up jumpers or one or two dribble jumpers, then the Lakers would be worlds better off. The Lakers are lucky that Kyle Kuzma has been the player that he's been. Otherwise, the Lakers would have KCP and maybe some of Jordan Clarkson. And other than that, no real shooters, right? With how Brook Lopez is shooting the ball. And so, look, expecting Lonzo to step in and succeed despite all of this is asinine. It's craziness. And until this roster does get better, and I don't think it's a crazy prediction to say that it's probably not going to get better this year. But until this roster gets better, until this roster gets better,
once they start playing Lonzo at the start of fourth quarters, they're going to be unstoppable, Anthony.
That's a good point. So is he just saying that Lonzo should never sit in the fourth quarter? Because nobody does that.
I think that's what he said. I don't think he understands how NBA basketball works. I'm starting to wonder, like, LeVar, man, like, you haven't been wrong yet. Don't start now.
That's a hell of a sentence. But with what the Lakers are currently looking to do, and this is why, like, I was wondering if it hurts Lonzo more than it helps him to play with the roster as it's currently constructed in these fourth quarters, because it's probably literally the worst situation that Lonzo could step onto a court into and be expected to succeed. Because not only are we, you know, the basketball stuff that we've already talked about, but the expectations and the swings of emotion that fans go through during fourth quarters. Like, every time Lonzo misses a three-pointer, fans are going to get a hell of a lot more angry about it in the fourth quarter of a close game than they would if it's the first possession of a game, right? Like, so you add that to the fact that this is a situation that, everything considered, is just a terrible spot for Lonzo to be expected to succeed. Of course this isn't going very well. And you know, I don't think it has to be a one way or another thing. If Lonzo looks like he has it one night, then he should continue to play in the fourth quarter. But if it doesn't look like he does, Clarkson has shown himself to be perfectly adequate in those situations, as evidenced by the stats that you gave earlier in the show.
Yeah, and like Clark, but I think that we can say that, and we can also say that Luke's not wrong to play Lonzo to close fourth quarters, or at least I don't feel that way.
I think he should be in all of them.
Then what are we doing here? Like, really? Like, we're gonna criticize him and just assume that, like, you know, when he plays him, and assume that, you know, like, hindsight, and go, hindsight's 20/20. He didn't play well, so it was the wrong decision this time.
No, I'm saying I don't think it should be a rule that Lonzo plays in the fourth quarter. Like, I don't think that should be one of Newton's laws with this team.
I don't think that it shouldn't be a rule, but I feel like in most cases, we'd be being hypocrites if we had just lambasted the coaching staffs the last couple years for not playing young guys down the stretch and giving them that experience, and then saying this year, oh wait, but Jordan Clarkson's playing well, play him over Lonzo, even though he's not in the Lakers' future
Jordan Clarkson is one of the guys that we lambasted the last coach for not playing in the fourth quarter.
But now, I mean, it's very clear that Jordan Clarkson is not part of the Lakers' future.
I mean, we don't know that for sure yet. I feel reasonably certain. We don't know that as a fact until he gets moved. Then you know you can look back and you can say, well, wait.
But even if, like, how much is he getting out of it over Lonzo?
I think the team benefits from winning. Like, I think the team benefit. I don't think you can win a fourth quarter game close fourth quarter game with Lonzo Ball on the court. We've seen it against whether it's the Warriors, or if it's the Nuggets, or if the Clippers, when they're down a few players. Like, it's just and look, the other thing here that's going to start taking place is, if these numbers keep holding up over the course of a season, guess what's going to happen in that locker room? Like, that the guys are going to look at him and be like, dude, either put up or tell your dad to shut up, because we can't keep losing these games close in the fourth quarter. Every time it's expected that you have to be on the court for these situations, just because you were drafted number two overall, like that it eventually the guys in the locker room, like you're talking about.
But then, how is that different than the last couple of years?
Because Jordan Clarkson isn't Ronnie Price.
That's fair.
So I don't know. It's tough. I'm not saying that he should never play in the fourth
quarter. But like, Lou Williams, inarguably, was far better than D'Angelo Russell last year, and Luke still got killed for playing him over Russell.
Would you say Lou Williams looked like he had more of a foot out the door than Clarkson does right now?
Well, yeah, I think that. I don't know. I don't know that significantly. I think both of them are about equally in the Lakers' future plans, considering where we're at in these years.
See,
Lou Williams was, I think, almost as much of a certainty to be out within like a year as Jordan Clarkson was this year.
I don't know if I would agree with that. Like, I never thought for a second that Lou Williams, because his timeline just didn't match up with the Lakers.
Lou Williams, obviously, but then Jordan Clarkson, like, they're trying to free up space for these two max guys. The math just doesn't work if you're keeping Clarkson, especially not with you know, people like you and Trevor are saying they have to keep Randall. If you really feel that way, there's no way you can feel like Jordan Clarkson is in the future plans.
Well, sure, but I'm saying until we know that,
don't know anything until we know it.
Well, until we start getting, because we haven't even seen real reports from anybody reputable that Jordan Clarkson is definitely on the table.
I think we have earlier this year, or in the summer it was talked about, and I think once the market opens up on December 15th, we're going to be hearing a lot about Jordan Clarkson. And we've heard last year that they shopped him.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that he's untouchable. Like, I don't, but I,
and like, it's just a math equation. Like, if they want to get two max stars, they can't have Randall, Deng, and Clarkson on there. They have to get rid of at least two of those three guys. And even if they keep one, the math is still tight. And so, like, if they want to keep Randall, which at this point I would think they should definitely value Randall over Clarkson, then you got to move on from Clarkson.
Yeah.
And so I don't really feel like he's in the Lakers' future plans. And so I don't really feel like it's that big of a deal if he's sitting for Lonzo. And I don't feel like you're going to lose the locker room doing that either, any more than you would have lost it for playing Russell over Lou Williams.
So would you lose the locker room if Andrew Bogut didn't play 7 minutes a night? Like, if he didn't play his, like, five minutes
every
second?
No, you wouldn't lose the locker room, but I think he loses a little bit of his status as a mentor and as a guy that the guys want to pay attention to and look up to. He loses a little bit of status for it. I really hope they aren't looking up to
Andrew Bogut. Whew,
They are.
Well, yeah, because he's 7 feet tall. But, like, I would say, like, if Lonzo is playing even decently, he should be in there for the fourth quarter. But on nights where he just and look, the other thing too that can happen, if Lonzo goes in there and starts stinking in the fourth quarter, guess what you can always do? sub him right out. Right? Like if the defense if it starts becoming as actively harmful as it's been so far this season, Luke can always adjust on the fly and throw Clarkson back in there. And it's nice that he has that as an option still. But if we start treating this as a Lonzo plays the fourth quarter, period, then and the Lakers keep losing in these fourth quarters, like, sure, LeVar is happy, but is anybody else? Because I don't even think Lonzo's happy in that situation. If he's the reason that if he's the sole difference between the Lakers' success in fourth quarters and their lack thereof,
he definitely isn't.
Well, I mean, right now, I would like to see what all of the different fourth quarter lineups look like, and what all of these guys' different off and on ratings look like in the fourth quarter. And if he is still, I would imagine he's probably up there or down there in terms of guys who the Lakers are most hurt by having on the court in these fourth quarters.
Yeah, so as far as guys that have played significant minutes, it's their best with Brewer on the floor in the fourth quarter. And then it's Lopez, and then it's Randall, Clarkson, Kuzma, Caldwell-Pope, Ingram, Hart, and then Lonzo.
Yeah, so he's the worst.
Pretty much. Then there's like Zubats, Bogut, and Nance. And oh my God, they're horrible with Nance in the fourth quarter.
Oh yeah, but he does the little things.
Negative 33.9 net rating for Nance in the fourth quarters.
Yeah. Yeah, he shouldn't be on the court in the fourth
quarter. He just makes winning plays. But the Lakers are never better in fourth quarters than when Lonzo is on the bench. They have their, of off-court ratings, they have the best net rating with Lonzo on the bench. They're outscoring their opponents by 2.5 points per 100 possessions with Lonzo on the bench during fourth quarters.
I'm trying to think. Against, who was it?
And Kuzma is next, so maybe he should be benched. Then Ingram, so I don't know. Maybe they should just bench all the young guys.
I'd have to look back at the tape, but when the Lakers had that 15-point run against them in Denver, was that with Nance and Lonzo on the court at the same time? Because I don't think that would shock me at all.
That would seem very possible.
Yeah. Yeah, that can't happen. Though, I mean, you're playing 3-on-5 in those half-court situations with those guys on the court.
Yeah.
Little things notwithstanding. All right, I think it's something that's going to be that we're going to keep an eye on moving.
We actually went longer on this than I thought we would.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting topic because it gets on. Yeah, it touches on.
I think you're full of crap and you're wrong.
What's funny is that like there's probably more than 50 people listening that have listened to this podcast and they're going to say like, yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah, way more than 50 people, I'll say that. And you know what, Anthony, though? You know what, I just to like bring this full circle, I'm not going to throw scissors at you.
Well, there's a reason we don't record in person.
Yeah, I'm upset with you right now, and I'm irritated, but I'm not going to throw any scissors at you.
I would be upset and irritated if I was dead-ass wrong, too.
You know what? I'm going to... You know what? Let's just agree to, like, fist bump and... Move forward.
We can still be friends.
Yeah. Best friends.
People who understand what we're talking about are dying right now. All right. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. The Lakers are back in action by the time you guys are listening to this. I have no idea who they play and when they play, but the Lakers will at least have a game that we'll be able to talk about.
Yeah, after. The Lakers are going to have a game tonight by the time that you guys are listening to this, mm-hmm. as I pull up their calendar furiously while filibustering.
Uh-huh.
The Lakers will have a game tonight against the Sixers. All right, showdown of the young cores. Again, that was actually a fun one last time.
Mm-hmm. It's in Philadelphia, which I don't think the Lakers are going to walk away with a win here.
That's going to be a tough one, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a really bad matchup. Like I think the Sixers are super talented. I really like Ben Simmons' game. I really like Joel Embiid.
Ben Simmons
obviously.
Is basically LeBron with less hype.
Sure, and no jumper whatsoever.
I'm just messing around. I just wanted to see what you'd say to that.
He's LeBron with a cool accent. But, like, I think as much hullabaloo was made of, like, oh, my God, look at the Sixers, look at this. I think they barely beat the Lakers by single digits last time they played, right?
That's a good question. I don't know.
They might have pulled away with free throws or something late, but I'm pretty sure. I mean, that game was close throughout, and people were tweeting as if the Lakers didn't belong on the same court with those guys. I just think both these teams are super young, and – both these guys, like key guys, have some questions about their games right now because they're all super young. So it's a fun game. I'm looking forward to it. We'll talk about it right after that game ends. I'm Anthony. That is Harrison. Make sure you're following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, and Lakers Outsiders. Thanks to those of you who entered the draft. That filled really quickly. That was crazy this morning. So that will be fun. We'll go over. I'll laugh at Harrison after I beat him soundly again.
We'll see.
Sucks to suck. Have a good one, everybody.